Sunday Peace Lecture, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, April 29th, 2013.
Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. That's a prayer we utter before speaking anything inspirational from the heart, recognizing that whatever we have to offer, we're passing along after having received it as a generous gift from a superior source, not taking credit, but simply as an instrument, and out of gratitude, passing forward what we've received and realized to some extent. And today I'm honored to be here in this historic temple. His Grace Rabindranath Prabhu and his wife have been here since I was a little boy. And they're still here. And when I was in Hare Krishna. I'm just deeply appreciating the service they've done to Srila Prabhupada over the years, and was remembering when we were in Mayapur this year in Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj's Bhajan Kutir, just on the Ganges in Mayapur. We had learned that he taught some of his disciples that steadiness is all important. In fact, he said something that stuck with me, and I'm almost afraid to say it, but I will. And that is that, he said, you should be steady at all costs in your devotional service, even at the cost of your own life. And also in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in a very famous verse, famous because it was given by Srila Ishvara Puri, the spiritual master of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, gave this verse to his disciple Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, telling him that this is the essence of all the verses of the Bhagavatam. It begins, Evam vratasva priyanam akirutya jatana rago jitachuta uchara hasatito rautiti rauti gayati unmadavan rittiti lokabhaya. It doesn't begin that way, that's the whole verse. And in that verse, the devotee, the teacher is saying that when one takes a vow to chant the holy names of the Lord, then gradually one attains an attraction for the name. The name becomes dear to him. And then the heart melts. And then one may act erratically according to modern society. That is, one may become ecstatic and not care for outsiders in how one expresses oneself through dancing or crying or rolling on the ground. And in the commentaries to that verse, the acharyas mention that some devotees show their ecstasy externally and others do not. But there's always two symptoms of the advanced devotee, and one is, according to Madhvacharya, steadiness. And the other is merciful speech. Mukti prasada means whatever comes out of the mouth of a person whose heart is actually clean, whose nindari shunya ridamipsita sangalabhya, their heart has become freed from the tendency to criticize others perniciously, then those two things are always there in advanced devotees, even if they don't show some ecstatic symptoms. Otherwise, steadiness is an ecstatic symptom. You can't show up every day for years and years and years and your spiritual portfolio shows that you gave your whole life without having ecstasy in your heart. That's my proposition, and I've backed it up by Shastra. And I'm leveling that praise at His Grace Rabindranath Prabhu and his wife, and thanking them again for their association over so many years. Hare Krishna. And now I'm seeing Balabhadra Prabhu, my dear godbrother, And when I see him, I feel ecstasy in my heart because I remember a time when we did service together in Atlanta, Georgia. And the year was, I don't remember years, but I have to ask Suridas. He remembers everything for me as far as years go. But we were engaged together in book distribution at the Atlanta airport. And at the time, the devotees had taken seriously Prabhupada's instruction not to deviate your mind even for a moment or an instant from distributing books. By the way, we have sets of books up there on this table, which we're going to be clearing out today. These are all meant to go. Everything must go. No book left behind. We follow George Bush's program. No book left behind. And if your cell phone goes off, then that means you can have a set. And it's a privilege to have a set. So we encourage everyone to turn their cell phones on. And Madhukari here, who's no lightweight, he's in the front row. He'll collect. Okay? We had a sign above the book room. That is Balabhadra and his teammates. I was visiting from out of town, but I felt part of the team there. They made me so welcome. They put a sign above the book room from which they were distributing thousands and thousands of books, and it said, "Eat book, sleep book." And they're in this mood of samadhi, working around the clock to organize themselves, their whole schedule around this instruction Srila Prabhupada had, don't deviate your mind. You know, take the instruction to give mercy to others through kirtan and also through written kirtan and so forth. And they were doing it in really wonderful ways. And Balabhadra Prabhu has been a stalwart in ISKCON for hundreds of years. Hare Krishna. It's so nice to see you. Hare Krishna. Thank you. In the ancient saying that one fragrant flower can spread its fragrance through entire forest. So the mood of pure devotion exhibited through steadiness becomes evident, and it pervades the entire world. One person who has this dedication in their heart, so powerful. And to all of you who are here tonight, I feel very honored to be in your presence, and I thank you very much for participating in the Krishna consciousness movement, which is the great cause. I say the great cause. There are many good causes, but there's only one great cause. And that is to give people an opportunity to use the human form of life to advance spiritually. Because all other kinds of advancement get erased at the end of life. It is true kindness, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Jive doi Krishna nam sarva dharma sar. The essence of all religion is to show mercy, to have compassion for others, and to give other people an opportunity to advance in spiritual life, especially through giving the name of God, which is prescribed in this particular age as a non-sectarian way that everyone can participate, whatever culture they're from, they can elevate themselves from whatever position they're in now to the highest position that was mentioned in the verse I quoted earlier from Srila Ishvara Puri, that one becomes a lover of God. And then all good qualities shine forth from the heart of such a person. One of the qualities is mentioned as a quality and also as a discipline, a kind of practice, in the verse that we're looking at today from the Sri Shikshashtakam, which is the Shikshashtakam is a set of instructions, a roadmap, so to speak, given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, explaining the entire process of devotional service in a truncated form. It's like a zip file. Everything's there. Everything that's there in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, is complete and represented in the Shikshashtakam. Not that you shouldn't take a set now of books. You should do that too. And this verse today, this is number 3. Tarnad api suhini chena, toror api suhishnuna, amanina manadina kirtaniya sadahari. Thank you. So, four places where we can meditate. Now, when we say meditate on this verse, this is recommended by the author of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is this golden book you see at the top of the stack. This is the boiled essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam given in a very practical way in the life teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. It's one of the rarest books on the planet. And in this book, this verse appears, Trinadapi Sunichena. And it is uttered by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, who's Krishna, come as a devotee to teach how to be successful in devotion to God, in devotional service to God. And the author of the book says that you should take this verse and string it on a garland and wear it around your neck. So, what does that mean? That we should keep it constantly in the fore, that the contents of this verse will assist us in all aspects of our spiritual life. And what are they? Four. Trinadapi Sunichena. So first one refers to a blade of grass. And humility. Humility is the reluctance to accept, is the tendency to consider oneself insignificant. To consider oneself insignificant. And so compared to a blade of grass is comparatively insignificant to a human being or other life forms. It's rather innocuous. It simply sits there. If you sit on it, it simply accommodates you. It doesn't bend back. And it's considered a lowly entity. And therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives this example for us to think about. Feel yourself as insignificant as a blade of grass. Humility. And then he talks about tolerance, which Srila Prabhupada mentioned recently. I heard in one of his lectures, he said there are many troubling situations for us in this life. And the remedy for most of them is simply to tolerate. For instance, when a loved one dies, what can you do? You feel helpless, you grieve, there's a grieving process to go through, and one must simply tolerate. And the example of tolerance is the tree. Because even if it's cut down, even if people break its branches, even if it doesn't get watered, it still continues to give shade when it's full and alive. And when it's cut down, it provides wood for people's shelter or for fuel and so forth. And it's the home for many living entities. It provides all kinds of shelter. And it doesn't ask much in return. It simply sits there and it's a foot drinker. It just drinks from its feet. And lives simply, but provides for so many people. This is the example that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said we should emulate in our life, to be tolerant like the tree. And amanina manadena. So man means the sense of I am the doer, which can be escalated to I am the controller, or I am the king of the world, so forth. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Nirmana moha jita sanga dosha adhyatma nitya vinivritti kama dvanvaya vimukta sukha dukha samjaya kachantya muda paramavyayam tat. He's giving advice in the beginning of the 15th chapter how to extricate oneself from the big tree of the material world, which is a banyan tree, which is so entangling that we don't know the beginning, we don't know the end, we don't know where how we got involved, but we've become so entangled. And he gives advice that one should cut down this tree. And one of the ways to do that, he said, nirmana. same instruction that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives here. To be without pride, false pride, to think that I'm the doer. In the life of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is an example of who was the perfect devotee, I'm often touched when I read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita about how he would always divert praise from himself to his devotees. When Balabhacharya met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and praised him, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "It's not me. Everything I know, I'm getting from my devotees." And he listed his devotees, Haridas Thakur, Ramananda Roy, Swarup Damodar. He said, "They've taught me everything." And in another case, he diverted praise to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and said, "Everything I know, I've learned from Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya." Meanwhile, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the one who turned Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's life around. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya at first thought, "I'm senior to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's from an inferior sannyasi sect. Let me upgrade him to a higher sect of sannyasis and let me instruct him. He's a young man, albeit beautiful, but he needs my assistance." Therefore, he sat Chaitanya Mahaprabhu down for 7 days and spoke to him about the Vedanta Sutra. And what did Mahaprabhu do? He just listened. He didn't say a word. And after 7 days, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, "Are you getting any of this? Because if you are, how come you're not asking any questions? Usually students respond and they seem a little lively, but you're just listening." Mahaprabhu said, "Well, I get the Vedanta Sutra, but your explanation of the sutras are obscuring their real meaning." And then that piqued the interest of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, which led to further discussion in which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed his intellectual prowess. It was so great that it bewildered the mind of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who began to develop an inkling that this is not a human being. This is a superhuman being. In fact, this is the Supreme Person. And he ended up surrendering to him. And then later on, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was asked about his quality, say, "Oh, I learned it from Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya." And this nirman means not me. I don't take credit. This is actually something that we can practice, not taking credit, not having the ego that I'm the doer, and manadena, giving credit to others instead of taking it myself. One of the great American presidents, Harry Truman, said once that it's amazing how much you can accomplish if you don't care who gets the credit. And that's practicable in your daily life. Whatever sphere of influence you have, and everyone has some sphere of influence, if you practice not accepting the credit, you'll notice, at least I notice, that false ego wants to grab onto it and said, wait, what about me? What about me? Where's my credit for all this? I want my stamp on it. Otherwise, I don't want it going out the door. Otherwise, how will it look?" And there's a revelation in giving that up, that one may realize one's innate completeness by giving up the superficial credit, which comes from the outside world, so to speak, and allowing that to pass wherever it may go, and simply being concerned with doing one's duty dutifully and making sure that one fulfills one's promise, and taking whatever comes, one realizes that actually Krishna is there within the heart reciprocating. No need to take from the outside. Bhayas barshe susakta ma vindat yatmani yatsukam. In the 5th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about the person who's advanced in spiritual life and says that he or she gets inspiration, happiness from within, not from without. Doesn't need stimulation of the mind or of the false ego from without, because Here she is experiencing the reciprocation from Krishna from within. Interesting to try this, because I've seen myself resisting that urge to take credit. It's almost like the urge to eat a half gallon of ice cream. Does that ever happen, or is it just me? Okay, there's my friend in the back. Yeah, a half gallon of ice cream, and the mind says, you know, why don't you get up and eat a half gallon of ice cream? And, well, there's a lot of reasons why not to. But if you resist, the urge always says that I'll be here forever, therefore give in. But if you resist and you take shelter of your higher self, then you realize the urge was something wispy, not substantial. Finally, it flies away. And this is the essence of inner life. It's attained by not succumbing to the urges of the senses, including the urge to take credit. So, trinadapi sunichena, toror api suhishnuna, amanina manadena, kirtaniya sadahari, means also being always ready to give respect to others, but not wanting to take it for oneself. Being ready means being ready. How do you prepare yourself for that? One thing about humility, remaining insignificant, is that it's true to our nature. Whatever's true to our nature tends to be satisfying. Whatever's not in line with our real nature tends to be unstable and unsatisfying. And I like to compare this humility to magnetic force. If you think of a gigantic, positively charged magnet, what's the biggest one you can imagine? No, I mean, but in terms of what would fit in Philadelphia, what's the biggest building you have here? City Hall. Okay, so say there's a magnet. Okay, the Comcast building. Let's say the Comcast building, the people there came up with a unique design from their engineers. And they said, we're going to make this building the biggest magnet in the world. So the Comcast building is a gigantic positive magnet. And now, if you put a positive magnet and a positive magnet together, what happens? They repel. If you put a positive magnet and a negative magnet near each other, what happens? Attract. The tendency to accept credit, to think that I'm the center and so forth, which is a contamination of our real consciousness, of our real constitutional position, is a kind of positivism. That is, that I'm asserting myself as being greater than I actually am. This is positively charged. Negatively charged means trinadapi sunichena, that I'm lower than the grass, that I give all respect to others, I don't accept respect for myself, I don't expect the credit, I do my duty dutifully. And Krishna, as Madhukari Prabhu was way ahead of me here, said Krishna's the biggest, he said Krishna's the biggest magnet he can imagine. In fact, that's what Krishna's name means. Krishna means the biggest magnet, positively charged magnet in anywhere. So now, if we simply take this advice to be negatively charged, so to speak, in a positive way, then just by our constitutional nature and Krishna's constitutional nature, we'll be attracted to Krishna. We'll be drawn towards him. And conversely, when we assert ourselves and when we take a false sense of self on board, we take that burden on our head and carry it around, it repels us from Krishna. Therefore, throughout the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna recommends that the path to knowledge begins with humility. This is not normally taught in academic circles, that humility is, I mean, maybe in philosophy and so forth, it may come up. But as a practice, it's not normally asserted. But Krishna says in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Amanitvam, Adambitvam, Ahimsa, Shantir, Arjavam, etc., when he names 20 items of knowledge, what brings one to actual knowledge? And the first two items are Amanitvam, Adambitvam, humility and pridelessness. Just by practicing in this way, the knowledge of the universe becomes available to me because I open myself. Mahatma Prabhu, the great Mahatma, disciple of Srila Prabhupada, who has been performing devotional service for decades, steadily, such a great stalwart, wonderful devotee, he once told us that there are three little words that block all learning. Should I say what they are?
Yes.
I know that. And in this, through a sense of false ego, when I'm hearing from others, or even when I'm interacting with the world, I close myself off with the attitude that I know that. I already know this. I already know this. When someone's speaking to me, in my mind, I'm thinking, I already know that. In fact, I know something even better than that. Wait till you stop talking and I start talking, and then we're going to find out who really knows something here. I know that, I know that, I know that, I know that. Did you stop talking yet? I know that. Okay, now listen, this is what happened to me. And it's such a relief to not engage that loop that goes on and on saying, I know that, I know that. To take that burden away, one actually becomes peaceful. To renounce that by taking shelter of the fact that Krishna knows everything. Vedaham samatitani vartamanani charjuna bhavishyani chabutani mamtu vedana kashchana. Krishna says, I know everything. He knows that. He knows everything. And it's a fact. And what a relief to take shelter of Krishna and say, I don't worry about the result. I don't worry about the credit. I don't worry about being the lowest of the low because I'm supported by Krishna. He's my shelter. And I have no need to exert myself. I don't need to put myself forward because I'm already supported. I'm already put forward by Krishna in a natural way by serving him in humility. So this verse is a gift to us. And it's a home project, that the author of Chaitanya Charitamrita has given us to make it into a garland. You have to get your own string. That means you have to think about this. You take it home, find out what these four jewels are that fit onto the string. Examine them. You can go into them as deeply as you could go into the deepest trenches of the ocean. And just by following one of these instructions in this verse carefully every day as a discipline, watching one's own tendencies and bringing them back to the point of feeling oneself to be humble or insignificant, which is a relief. It's a relief to feel oneself insignificant, and it's a relief to give credit to others. The senses are bad masters. They give bad advice. As one great devotee immemorialized this mood in a verse, Kamadinam katina katida palita durnideshas tesham jata mayina karuna natrapano pashanti utsri jaitanata yarupate samprata labda buddhis tamayata sharanam abhayam mam yunkshva madasye. He said, for how long and in how many ways have I obeyed the bad masters of my senses? They've never given me mercy. They've never given me time off. And I never questioned them. But no more. Now my intelligence is awakened. Spiritual intelligence. And now I'm turning my back on the bad masters. And I'm approaching Krishna and asking him, let me serve you, not the bad masters. When one takes this path of service to Krishna, decides that this will be my course in life, full satisfaction of the self is available. And the practice of humility becomes one's relish, one's food in life. And in fact, in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami says that as one advances in spiritual life, one acquires a proportionate amount of dainya. And dainya is defined by him as utter humility. And he distinguishes it from low self-esteem. Low self-esteem makes one more the center of attention. In other words, one becomes typically a victim, and therefore the center of attention. Victimology is interesting because one then is able to draw all the attention of the universe to oneself, because it's being done to me, I'm the victim, I can't support myself, and so forth. And when one is full of dainya, one is not depressed, but one is feeling ecstasy. And it's a paradox that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describes to Sanatana Goswami, saying that a devotee who is advancing in pure devotional service feels him or herself to be completely inadequate, although that person is fully qualified and becoming more and more qualified, simultaneously feeling insignificant, unqualified, and so forth. One other aspect I wanted to talk about humility, so as to distinguish it from false humility or low self-esteem, or simply lying down flat when people or circumstances in the world come to knock us over. And that is that humility doesn't necessarily mean that one holds one's demeanor in a timid, one is not timid necessarily by being humble. One does not simply give in to the whims of others who tell him what to do. And the example is Arjuna, who has completely fulfilled the spirit of this verse of being humble by going out and fighting on behalf of Krishna. And as Prabhupada mentions in his Bhagavad Gita as it is, how can one say, how is this humble of Arjuna to go out and fight with others? And many people might say, well, how is this even a spiritual book? If you're not embracing the self-effacing path of, you know, taking away the false ego, how is Arjuna executing this verse, the spirit of the verse? And the answer is that he didn't consider himself significant. He was humble. He considered the order of Krishna to be significant. He abandoned his own idea of how to deal with the situation, and he took Krishna's higher authority. And this is humility. Srila Prabhupada also assumed the title of founder acharya and sat on a big seat. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is a great acharya, said at one of his Vyasa Puja ceremonies, that's the ceremony in which on his day of his appearance he's worshipped by others, and he said, some may be thinking, who is this big animal sitting up here on this seat, accepting praise from others? And then he went on to explain that sometimes one must take a position contrary to one's desire or even what appears to be the spirit of humility for the sake of executing the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So was Prabhupada humble when he took the title Founder Acharya and insisted upon it and said this must be on all the literature? Was he simply asserting himself as, I want to be the center? Quite the opposite. He took it as a service, knowing that someone had to hold the center. And because there was no one else, he took the position on behalf of his spiritual master to continue the Krishna consciousness movement. And this may also be humility. One has to examine the context in which the humility is being exhibited. It's not simply a way of giving up one's position, but actually holding on to Krishna's position and being assertive in that way. That is true humility. And finally, the great King Parikshit Maharaj, I'd like to mention, because what we're talking about tonight and is embodied in the life of Parikshit Maharaj, who's the subject of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the book on the left-hand side. You see the larger case on the left, and there's some smaller cases piled up. On the left-hand side, the blue book that's facing us, this is the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the book that Prabhupada took so much trouble to write when he was sitting in Vrindavan, India, thinking about coming to America, how he would come to America. And when you come across the ocean, or when you travel anywhere, you have to think about, what am I going to bring with me? Isn't it? Or is it just me? Whenever I travel, especially with all this security and everything, you have to think, what am I going to bring? Not too much, not too little. Well, Prabhupada didn't bring much, except for his books. You can see what his priorities were. And that's the book he brought, that Srimad Bhagavatam. He brought it to America to present it to the Western audience. That was the instruction he took from his spiritual master. And the subject of the book is the great King Parikshit Maharaj, who received a curse from a little punk. Really a punk. I mean, he was just playing around. Little kids, when they get full of themselves, when they're just starting to come of age and they feel some power, they can be really obnoxious sometimes. And this little kid, Sringi, was showing off to his friends. And in the process of it, he cursed the king. And at that time, there was still power in the Brahminical order. He spent the rest of it cursing the king. And normally one might react that I'm a king. Who is this punk cursing me? I mean, if somebody cuts you off on the freeway, what do you think sometimes? Well, who is that? How dare you? I mean, the false ego can jump up really quickly, can't it? Or is it just me? It can jump up sometimes. But that didn't happen to Parikshit Maharaj. When he was cursed and the word came to him that this little kid just cursed you to die, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, in explaining the qualities of a pure devotee, one who has attained the stage of bhava, he gives Parikshit Maharaj as an example of someone who has attained bhava. And what is his reaction to getting cursed to die in 7 days by an insignificant little boy? He says he forgave him immediately. He said, I forgive him. This is called shantir, or forgiveness. This is a symptom of humility, of dainya, utter humility. He accepts the condition that came down from above and through the agency of a little boy, and he just says, I forgive him. I take it as divine arrangement. What knowledge is he ready for now when he sits down in utter humility with a melted heart, waiting to see what is my duty at the time of death? What words are uttered by the greatest teacher of all time, Shukadev Goswami, when he comes by the arrangement of the Supreme Personality of God to sit down in front of this king? And what was the clamor that must have occurred at that time? If you can imagine how, if President Obama decided to give up his presidency, and he sat down on the Potomac River wearing culpins, that would really do it. I mean, CNN would be there, I guarantee you, along with the Chinese newspaper and everybody else in the world, to see what's going to happen now. And this is the scene in the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the opening scene. This is the context in which this book was spoken. The greatest Vaishnav king, whose heart is already melted in love for God, cursed by a little boy, and now he sits down on the bank of the Ganges, and then by Krishna's arrangement, the greatest teacher of all time appears. Now what's going to be spoken? We want to hear it. We want to know what that is. That is worth hearing. And that is why Srila Prabhupada brought this book to America. He wanted everyone to hear this, because it is described as the medicine that actually cures the rogue disease of the heart, lust, anger, greed, false ego. Just by hearing the book on a regular basis, it acts like a tonic to clear the mind and heart of all these anomalies. So, my request is that you please take all these books. There's only two exhibited here, but we have many more downstairs. So we'd like to just take them all out tonight. There's some nominal fee for these books. Don't even consider it. The cost is insignificant. If you already have one of these, you can also take another one. And you can either hold it to the next full moon and give it out to someone else, because the Kurma Purana gives this benediction that anyone who gives this as a gift on the full moon day gets the reward of going back home, back to Godhead. That's Shastra. So if you know someone that's going to have a wedding or a birthday or something like that, don't get them a, you know, fill in the bank. A what? Don't get them a toaster. I mean, I was thinking even worse. I mean, there are worse things than toasters. Cuisinart's not bad, but, you know, there are things that can actually... People don't want them anyway. They won't use it. But they will use this. When you put it in your house is transformed into a spiritual planet, actually. So, that Srimad Bhagavatam is available. Dana Tarpita, would you stand up just for a sec? This is Dana Tarpita. He'll just take your orders for all that. And then the Chaitanya Charitamrita is right next to it. You can take that too. So take them both. Take the Srimad Bhagavatam. Take everything. Just take them out. Ask Dana Tarpita to clear out the book room downstairs and take these books out. And if you already have it, keep one for upstairs, one for downstairs. That's what I do at my house. And give them to other people. And relish the Srimad Bhagavatam. Just by hearing the vibration of the Bhagavatam, you will experience the nectar of life. And the cure, it is the curative that takes away the burden of carrying any kind of trace of false ego within one's heart. Om Tat Sat. Okay. So, what should I do? For those who want the Bhagavatam. Should they tell you? Should I tell them how much it is? Because they just said it's a token. The Bhagavatam is normally $900. Normally. But today it's $250. I learned this the other day at our Sunday program, because spokesperson for ISB told us that each individual book, and he knows because he got a PhD at Stanford and he knows how much books cost. He told us that each book would cost upwards of $90 or something like that, or $80. Anyway, he calculated that the set of books would be well over $1,000. But he said it was $250 only. So I thought that was quite incredible. And then the Chaitanya Charitamrita, how much is that? Oh, come on. Did you hear what he said? That's ridiculous. It's $100. So that's only $100, and the other sets, they take them both for $350. Okay? All right. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Go Premanande. Arigato.